Hello and welcome to Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. With Databook, we talk to healthcare leaders about technology, innovation, and the transformation of healthcare. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll get started in just a moment. In this episode, we talk with Kevin Olson, Chief Information Officer of Jupiter Medical Center, one of South Florida's top hospitals. We talked about the difficulties of the COVID-19 pandemic, the threat of cyber attacks, the challenges of digital transformation, and helping consumers engage with healthcare more easily. Well, welcome to Databook. I'm Ron Southwick, editor of Chief Healthcare Executive, and I'm talking today with Kevin Olson, the Chief Information Officer at Jupiter Medical Center. Kevin, thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Ron.
Okay. This has been just unbelievably challenging time for CIOs in healthcare, especially with the pandemic. Just as a starting point, how challenging have these last 2 years been for you?
It's been extremely challenging for folks. I mean, we try to get, projects that we're trying to transform some things off the ground, and at Jupiter and other organizations are facing the same thing, but same time, fighting COVID and everything that comes with that, and trying to address the needs of our nurses and caregivers that are taking care of patients through this whole pandemic era. And so it's been a unique challenge that I think we've never faced before. So hopefully we're seeing the light at the end of the tunnel here.
Yes, crossing fingers on that point. Yeah. So when you're in a sort of constant state of emergency, how do you balance between putting out the fires, but also trying to advance forward with initiatives that you know need to get done?
It is you said the word balance, right? So it's always a bit of a challenge, and it's been a unique challenge, as we've already stated. But I think, a lot of terms have come up through this whole era, right? So ability to decompress, be agile, to pivot, all those kind of things. So I think the key to it is your team, making sure that they're, being able to do just that, removing the barriers that don't need to be there, mm-hmm. probably more on a higher level than we've ever had to kind of focus on before, because there's those hygiene things that are just always in front of the team that are always there, but it's trying to smooth those things out, mm-hmm. Automate those things that we can at a pretty low level, so we can eliminate some of those, again, mundane tasks and have them focus more on the strategic initiatives. Just for an example, just standing up a clinic to do testing and to then get the vaccine out, all those things we had to pivot on pretty quickly. So it's created challenges, but with that also some dividends at the back end that says some of these things maybe we can do a little bit differently going forward, to kind of keep not the same level of pace, hopefully, but learn from some of the outcomes that we've had through this pandemic era. So that's kind of some lessons learned there, probably.
Yeah. Well, you've touched on a little bit, maybe talk a little bit more. What are some of those key lessons you're learning in terms of lessons you've taken from the pandemic that you hope to replicate going forward?
Well, the ability to, we all had strategic initiatives we were working on before the pandemic. Well, some of those we kept on with, trying to meet the needs, trying to grow a cardiovascular program, trying to grow an oncology program. Those never left our sight, right? So it's keeping an eye on the big needle movers. At the same time, being able to kind of filter out the things that are probably less needle moving, that would be great to have, but kind of had to be deferred a little bit because of the priorities of what were in front of us. Trying to balance those strategic things that I just mentioned, along with meeting the needs of our patients in our community when it comes to testing, when it came to vaccine distribution. So we had to, pivot and do some quick kind of MVP light kind of things to get some things out the door. So it's, again, I think it'll create some real, a lot more enduring lessons learned going forward.
You mentioned about trying to take some burdens off of your team, trying to remove some things that they didn't have to wrestle with. How did you take care of your team members when there was so much going on and everybody was just at unprecedented levels of stress?
Well, I think we had to partner at the right time with the right folks externally, to get some things done. Because remember, at the same time, we've had an unprecedented amount of cyber attacks going on, right? So I'll use that as an example. So we used some partners I kind of worked with in the past to kind of make sure that we have good, strong processes in place, that we're doing our monitoring, that we're doing our patching and all those kind of things. Again, hygiene items around the security space. So I think the partnership was key on some of those things. We just moved our level one tier support, our tier one support to a different company as well. That you really got to be able to focus on those, again, strategic things, making sure that these more, you know, things that are better in the hands of people that do it all the time with a larger number of folks, clients, that can take it to the next level. So we did that on our tier one support as well. So, which really made a difference, because some of those tasks that were kind of onerous on the team, account provisioning and so forth, those are kind of pivoted and moved. So and we plan to do a little bit more of that going forward as well. So I think it's partnerships, key partnerships has been crucial to this era.
That takes a mindset of being sort of nimble and trying to find partners who can help you focus on your mission, take some burdens off you. But at the same time, sometimes you have that mindset, well, you want to do it yourself. And that's why we've always done it.
Right.
How tough is it to get over that mindset and to get others to see this is something we should find a partner for?
Right. That's a great question. And we're still going through some of that to a certain degree, because some folks have not been exposed to this kind of approach. I mean, it seems to me pretty mundane now. It's like it's very typical. But for some in the organization that have not experienced that, they look at it like, oh my gosh, that's a little bit potentially threatening, right? So when you're trying to supplement some services for those team members that need help, they sometimes don't realize that they need the help, because they're plugged in on their daily stuff trying to get one objective complete, right? But you also got to step in and just build that confidence that, hey, we're not trying to take anything away from you. We're just trying to supplant additional resources to help you succeed. So it's communication and having that dialogue with the team members is crucial.
You mentioned cyber attacks. It's something too many healthcare organizations are dealing with. What's the extent of the challenges you've faced, and how are you trying to, you know, bolster security as much as possible?
I think that one is the top thing that comes to mind is the talent. You know, because it's such a demanding area right now, or in demand from a market standpoint. And so I think getting the right folks at the table, I've been fortunate to get a really strong director in place in that area. And then he's been able to build his team. But at the same time, when you're trying to adjust to the threat landscape, if you will, it takes, again, you know, you gotta reach out to the right partners to kind of make sure that, hey, number one, we're on the right track, or if we have to correct and course correct, we can do just that. And so I think everybody's experiencing that. And so I think if you're not paying attention to that, that's dangerous. So I think, again, just kind of seeing where the puck is moving in that area is crucial.
One thing, as I've done some reporting on cybersecurity these last few months, I've talked to different leaders, and healthcare organizations are dealing with threats sometimes, not necessarily the most elaborate schemes, and not necessarily international jewel thieves per se, but just very simple phishing things that people just click on and go from there. How do you kind of change that culture in terms of getting people to be aware that, like, you know, you've got to be mindful of the emails. You really have to update stronger passwords and do the simple things that sound basic, but at the same time make a big difference in improving security.
I think it starts with the senior leadership team and the board. I mean, we go so far as to make sure that the board is really plugged into this, and anybody that's reading, you know, whatever correspondence that they receive is there, right, daily. And so I think starting with our board, we have a pretty strong, very strong board, and I think they are very attuned to what's going on. And so I think keeping them plugged into what are we doing to make sure that Jupiter Medical Center is as protected as possible is crucial. And then with the senior leadership team, they take part in the phishing exercises, the tabletop exercises when we have them. So I think it's really putting that information out in front of them so they can see really what this is all about.
What keeps you up at night when you think about cybersecurity, or at least makes it a little tougher to go to sleep?
You know, we've got the Ukrainian thing going on right now, right? So it's, you know, there's two trains of thought that, oh my gosh, there's more threats coming on, and everybody's looking to see what's going on there. But then there's also a train of thought that says, you know, maybe that's going to have alleviate a little bit of the attacks on the U.S. because Russia's got their mind focused on the Ukrainian thing. But it's I think you got to keep on top of world events. So because with that comes some cyber activity, right? So it's certainly cyber. It's really, are we keeping on task to modernize our platforms as much as possible to keep up pace with kind of this, is probably a little bit overused, but this digital transformation that we're all trying to, you know, be a part of, mm-hmm. and make sure our patients have the best, you know, possible experience as well. So it's those things, keeping the pace of change, the cyber piece. I think those two are enough to keep me up.
with what's going on with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, I mean, federal authorities have urged corporate America and healthcare organizations to be more mindful and to do whatever they can to strengthen their systems. Have you had to change anything that you're doing in light of what's going on, or have you seen any increased activity or, you know, breaches tied to what's happening?
We've been fortunate on the breach front, you know, knock on wood. But I think what we've really tried to increase our pace on is our communication with our technology vendors. Mm-hmm. And the folks that we have services with, to make, you know, ask the questions, what are you seeing? What do we need to do? Do we need to add another layer of security into the ecosystem? So we've been doing just that with a couple of our key partners. So that it's that, I think, more increased dialogue, again, with the companies that are, again, helping protect us. So that we've been doing that regularly, the team has.
You mentioned the digital transformation, and increasingly, you know, we're seeing more and more studies and reports that patients, consumers just want to be able to easily schedule appointments and you know, just have the convenience they see in other sectors in healthcare. Can you talk about the steps you're doing to try and help help patients have an easier experience in using and engaging the medical center?
Yeah, there's a couple of examples. We've got one going on right now with the call centers, trying to, you know, automate some things around, you know, appointment scheduling and so forth. That's going on right now. But, you know, we're trying to unify experience for the patient, because right now we have several platforms where they can, you know, collect their clinical information, pay their bill, et cetera. So we're really trying to create one digital avenue into all their information, mm-hmm. whether, again, to, you know, get the information I just mentioned, along with communicating with their provider. So that's kind of a journey we're on right now, is to look at what that means. That could mean, you know, a new portal on the front end. It could mean, you know, consolidating some vendors as well. So more to come on that. We're still early in that process, but we continue to kind of make enhancements there where necessary, some kind of incremental enhancements. But I think we'll be, you know, really want to make a kind of a major transformational change, because I think we have to do just that.
How much has the explosion of telehealth changed healthcare? I mean, and do you think that change is here to stay?
I do and I don't. It's kind of probably a strange response, but I think we all saw a peak in it, right, in telehealth usage. And I think strategically, based on your market, I think there's some things that can be done. For us, we're in, you know, in South Florida, so a lot of, you know, people come here for the season and they go back home. So I think strategically, you know, let's just say if you unfortunately ended up in the hospital with an acute, you know, episode of care, and you didn't have a primary care physician back home in New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, wherever, you know, you could establish that relationship and continue some telehealth, you know, well visits and those kind of things. So we're looking at those kind of opportunities down the road as well, or currently. But I think we've all seen the spike and then kind of the ebbing. I think it's come down some, but I think it's here. It's here. And I think the federal government has made it reimbursable still maintains its reimbursable status. Mm-hmm. So that makes it a game changer as well.
Do you see a difference in what patients want compared to, say, 5 years ago, in terms of being more willing to switch a provider or to sort of even just voice displeasure if they're just not happy with a given service or even just part of the patient experience?
Yeah. It's a good question. I think there's several factors there. Your insurance company, certainly. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I think the population you mentioned, you know, population, the experience being different with different populations. I would say, I think there's a bit of a misnomer sometimes with a elderly patient group that says, oh, they don't use technology as much as somebody else. I think that's probably far from the truth. Mm-hmm. When you look at all the interactions that they do, if they're, again, in our example, let's use our market for an example, they're down in South Florida for the winter, and their loved ones are back home in, again, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. They're using their devices constantly to communicate, right? So it's the same thing with their providers. And so I think having that experience could be a differentiator in shifting that, the volume and the patient demographic to our organization as well. So I think it kind of intertwines. Hope that answers your question.
That, I think it does, but it just kind of gets in that whole question you've already talked a little bit about, but you've got sort of a unique patient population where, unlike a lot of other areas in the country, you have, you know, snowbirds, you've got people that are fleeing south for winter. So how does that change the demands of the healthcare system when you've got a lot of people that are in town for maybe a few months to beat the cold?
Yeah, and I think it's some of those things we've talked about, you know, potentially leveraging telehealth. It's streamlining and making that experience as simple as we can. And that doesn't go just for the elderly population, that goes for any population. Mm-hmm. If you look at the population growth in South Florida, it's increasing big time. And that's across the spectrum of the age groups. So I think you have to adapt your technology to those different populations. And I think if you do it right, you do it once and it's there for everybody.
I wanted to ask about the increasing use of automation for a lot of administrative tasks and some of the things that burden providers, even things like, you know, prior authorization, there's growing call, like kind of try and automate more of that. Could you talk about, like, you know, your work and trying to do some of these things more electronically?
Yeah, I'll use the onboarding of the physician, right? Mm-hmm. So I think onboarding in general can be very onerous for mm-hmm. organizations, that especially if you have very disparate systems and you've got humans setting up accounts for all these different applications that people need. You know, Ron needs access to application ABC and on down the line. So we're really trying to automate those things as much as we can with three core products. It's really ServiceNow, our ERP, and then some identity and access management tools mm-hmm. to really take that manual burden out of that whole process, because it's time sensitive. We want to get people to work on top of license as fast as they can when they come on board. But not having access to systems just isn't acceptable anymore. So we've got to make that quick. So that's one initiative that we've got underway right now. Physician access and training, I think there's real opportunities there. People are kind of used to now having kind of micro training at their fingertips. And so that's something we'll be looking at as well. But we're really trying to get those core functions in place to automate those processes.
There's been so much talk about the push to interoperability in healthcare and exchanging records between systems more easily. It's been talked about for years. Do you feel like that there's now a real momentum behind that? Is this something that you're going to see happen, or do you still feel like we're still quite a bit away?
I think we've made a lot of progress over the last 8 years, 5-8 years, something like that. Again, CMS requirements required it, right? With some of our tools, and so I think that continues to be a challenge for some and an opportunity for some too. So I think it's going to be an ongoing thing, and it's going to likely expand beyond just the EHR to EHR transmission of data. It's going to be to other platforms. I think, you know, if you look at more at home care, you know, those kind of models, you're going to have to be able to interoperate, you know, pretty tightly. And so that's just anything from a clinical device, you know, that's strapped on your arm to information stored in your iPhone. So it's going to increase, I think. Yeah, those demands will increase.
Just want to get some of your thoughts, or maybe even just a hazard guess, in terms of seeing more, you know, big players like, you know, Amazon and CVS making big plays into the healthcare space. How do you see that playing out over the next few years, and how that's going to affect healthcare organizations with that added competition?
That's a multi-million dollar question. I mean, you know, on one hand, Microsoft and others have taken a stab at it before, right? It's mm-hmm. it's a complex environment. So when you're competing against the Cerners, the Epics, the Meditechs, you know, they've been in that space a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I think at the very least, there's a lot of transformation potential there, that either will be adopted by those companies, through a new platform. I'm speaking, probably down the road here, but, minimally, I think it creates some response by the folks that have kind of, again, the big three, to kind of do the things we're talking about, the interoperability, the patient experience things and so forth. So I think, again, people are used to that retail experience. The good news is the folks you just mentioned, the Amazons and Microsoft, they're used to that, building that experience for their customers. And if they can adopt that for the patient population, I think that's a good thing. Now, will they displace the others? I mean, that's probably speaking a little bit large, but I guess it remains to be seen.
Well, other than hopefully putting the worst of the pandemic behind us, what are you excited about looking forward in the coming months?
Oh, for Jupiter Medical Center, it's really kind of transforming some of the major core systems, right? So we've got to make a decision on our ERP. There's some other core systems that we have to make a decision on as well down the road. And so the ability to kind of create this new experience for not just the patients, but for the caregivers, I think is real, really exciting. So it's really just an opportunity to kind of lay the foundation, then take the next level of all the things we just talked about, automation, the experience for the patients and the providers. That's kind of keeps you energized.
Excellent. Okay, well, I think that kind of wraps up the time we have, but thank you very much for taking some time. As busy as you are, I know this must have been a bit of a challenge to fit in the schedule, but I really appreciate the time and definitely enjoyed the conversation. So thanks for taking some time with us today.
Thank you, Ron. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining Databook, a podcast presented by Chief Healthcare Executive, a brand of MJH Life Sciences. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. For the latest news, analysis, and insights on healthcare, visit our website, chiefhealthcareexecutive.com. You can follow us on social media on LinkedIn and Twitter. I'm Ron Southwick, Senior Editor of Chief Healthcare Executive. Thanks again for joining us. Take care.